Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday late. Now, it is unusual, I know, for these two gentlemen to be joining me on a Tuesday night and for a Wednesday posting, but we've got some changes to the Hoop Collective, which I'll talk about in a second. But first, let me introduce from New York City, where he attended the New York Knickerbockers beating the Utah Jazz on Tuesday night, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys. It's Knicks 14-2 in January. People in New York, very excited.
Don't do the pod before the pod. Joining us from Minneapolis, Minnesota, where he's on the road. He was in Oklahoma City on Monday night watching the Timberwolves and the Thunder. The entire upper Midwest was unable to watch that game, but McMahon was there. That's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Hey, I know folks missed me in Dallas last night or Monday night now that the pod's coming out. But don't worry, I'll see the Mavs, or at least what's left of them, here in Minnesota.
Yeah, the Mavs are kind of banged up for that game coming up on Wednesday. But the Wolves are in first place. We'll be talking about that in a few minutes. So we have a little bit of a change. I'm sure all of you, the listeners to the pod, very devoted, were in front of your televisions on Tuesday at 2 o'clock Eastern when the Hoop Collective made its debut on ESPN2, the pod that we recorded on Sunday with McMahon and George Sedano. So we're going to rotate that cast for the show that comes out on Tuesdays, and that means McMahon and Bontemps are going to be out on this pod on the Wednesdays and Fridays, so get used to it.
All right. Listen, okay. I watched that thing on the plane on the way up here, baby. I mean, that is some high-quality television as far as I could tell.
Okay. So, Bontemps, the Knicks dealing with an absence of two starters now, with Mitch Robinson out with his injury, and then
three starters. Mitchell Robinson, OG Anunoby, and Julius Randle.
Well, OG Anunoby was out tonight. That's true. But longer
last
term.
Last two games. Right.
Yeah, with Julius Randle suffering a shoulder dislocation over the weekend. They beat the Jazz, as you mentioned, to finish January at 14-2. I think it's their first 14-win month since 1994. Or their 93-94
I believe
season.
Since January of 94, when they went on to reach the NBA Finals.
Oh, wait. Were they an 8 seed then, though, right?
No, that was 99.
That was 1999. Oh, okay. 1994 was when they played the Dream in the finals.
That was the OJ. Games. That was the OJ finals.
Yes.
So anyway, Dante DiVincenzo, with the game of his Knicks career so far on Tuesday night, hit 9 out of 15 3-pointers.
Flat out one of the best signings of the entire summer. Last summer.
You know they
not
got
even him. Not even for the full mid-level.
That's right. They actually, I think, to enable them to enter the buyout market, they were thinking about it back in the summer. It was sort of a full mid-level contract, but they actually gave him a little bit less. It was like 3 and like 34 or something like that. Or did they give him 4?
It was 4 years, but it was just under the full mid-level. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the Knicks are just rolling off victories. And, you know, I just want to point something out before we talk about the Knicks. As we sit here, and Philadelphia is still playing against the Warriors right now, we'll see how that game finishes out. It's in the third quarter as we're recording this, and it's close. The Knicks were essentially tied. They had one more win and one more loss than Philly, a couple of percentage points behind them. But Knicks and Philly are basically tied. And the Knicks are 2 games behind Milwaukee in second. You know, and the Bucks have a challenging, one of the hardest schedules left in the league coming in and dealing with some changeover. Maybe they'll improve defensively. They already had a step forward defensively in Doc Rivers' first game against the Nuggets, which they lost. But the Knicks are sitting here, and even though they're now dealing with injuries, they're in tremendous position, Bontemps, because of how great they played this month. And it really makes me wonder, like, what their ceiling is. Forget about the postseason. What their ceiling is, you know, can they get the 2 seed? And if you get the 2 seed, now you're talking about a play-in team in round 1 and home court potentially in round 1 and 2. Look, Philly and Milwaukee might hold on to 2 and 3, but the path is there for the Knicks. And knowing that, how do they approach the trade deadline, knowing that the 2 seed is right there within their grasp, Bontemps?
I just want to read a couple stats before we start, because you mentioned we're going to talk about the Cavs too. Defensive rating in the month of January, Knicks went 14-2, have a defensive rating of 104.4, best in the league. Cavs were second, 104.8, went 10-2 in the month. Knicks had a net rating of 15.8 points per 100 possessions.
So the Knicks played 4 more games than the Cavs over the 30
Cavs
days?
Cavs are playing the Pistons tomorrow, so they might end up first in these categories. But
the Red Hot Pistons.
As of January 30th, night of, Knicks had a plus 15.8 net rating in the month of January. Cavs plus 15.7. And as you mentioned, those two teams have skyrocketed up the standings. We'll talk more about the Cavs in a minute. But the Knicks are, like you mentioned, what's their ceiling? To me, this is the ultimate Tom Thibodeau team, and it's the ultimate try-hard team, which sounds like an insult. But really, like, the thing that's fun about this Knicks team, watching them on a nightly basis, is you never get cheated if you watch the Knicks play. These guys play insanely hard every night. They do everything they're supposed to do. They might not hit shots. They might not win, but you're going to get a representative effort on a nightly basis. It's why the people here in New York, they've always loved these kind of teams. They're a lot like those 90s Knicks teams who were like that lunch pail kind of group, show up and grind your way through games. And with the way they're playing, it's been amazing to watch, especially as they lose Mitchell Robinson. You go, man, what are they going to do? You got Isaiah Hartenstein, who stepped in the starting lineup, has been phenomenal. Past couple weeks, Will Hardy was raving about the impact he's had on them after the game tonight, coach of the Jazz. Now they've got Julius Randle out. Last two nights, they've had Julius Randle and OG Anunoby out. They're playing Precious Achiuwa at power forward next to Hartenstein. He's come in and have big games the last couple nights. Yes, they beat a bad Charlotte team. And yes, they beat a Jazz team at the end of a very long road trip that was clearly running on fumes. But they are hounding teams on a nightly basis. They're playing great. And they don't have championship upside right now. But the Knicks have done a remarkable job of hitting a lot of singles, hitting a couple home runs, getting Jalen Brunson in free agency. And they have positioned themselves with a ton of draft capital going forward, with a great team right now that's got a chance to be a top two or three seed in the East, that whenever the next guy comes available, that's a true difference-making player, the Knicks are going to be sitting there with able to outbid everybody for them, and then they can be a team that truly can be a championship-level team.
It's and just been the culmination attractive. Of it. That's they'll right. Be attractive. They're, like, they're a team that somebody, superstar X who wants to be traded would see as a preferred destination. Because they are set up to win, and because it is a group of guys that you want to play with. And their star right now, Jalen Brunson, is not a me guy. He's a guy who, he shared the ball with Luka Doncic and went to the Western Conference Finals. He's more than capable of sliding into the number two role or and enhancing a fellow star. Is Jalen Brunson the best player the Knicks have had since Patrick Ewing? Not the biggest name. Carmelo's obviously the biggest name. Is Jalen Brunson Carmelo, the best player?
Carmelo finished top three in MVP. I would say Carmelo was probably a better player than Jalen Brunson. But look, Jalen Brunson is the best point guard the Knicks have had since Walt Frazier. And that's really not a debatable statement. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things you could say are transformational things, like that word gets thrown around sometimes too much. Jalen Brunson leaving the Mavs and signing with the Knicks for both teams was a transformational transaction because of what's followed since then.
Well, and it's not just his production. His intangibles are essential. The Mavericks have really missed them, and the Knicks have really benefited from them. Now, if you want to kind of go down a little rabbit hole, you can say, well, how much difference do you think Derek Lively makes long-term for the Mavericks? Because if they don't botch the Brunson situation, they don't have him. But forget about that. Let's talk about the 14.
Derek Lively for Jalen Brunson?
Did you feel Jalen Brunson was a $100 million player when that deal was happening?
I did, because here's the way, like you say, $100 million player, damn, that's a lot of money. And then you looked at point guard salaries and you said, that's middle of the road starting point guard salaries. And I said, he's at least... I think Jalen Brunson was going to be an all-star, which I believe he will be once the announcements come out on Thursday? I wasn't sure about that.
Forget all-star. He's going to be an all-NBA.
Well, he should have been the starter.
But I was
Some people voted him as the starter. Apparently not enough.
The media did vote him as the starter. It was the fans that didn't.
Yeah. I was quite confident he was going to be a good starting point guard. And it wasn't going out on a limb. The year that his last year in Dallas, he got better and better and better during his 4 years in Dallas. He went from his third year being, I think, third and sixth man of the year, running to his last year. He was the second best player on a Western Conference Finals team. And Luka missed a lot of games that year for a variety of reasons, COVID and kind of the shutdown to get him in shape and just knick-knack injuries and So it was like a 20-game sample size, including a few games in the playoffs. And Brunson averaged like an efficient 20 points, 7 assists. You know, so you looked at that and said, hey, he's going to be a good starting point guard. And by the way, including a 41-point game and a 31-point game in the playoffs, I can't sit here and tell you I thought he was going to average 27 points per game. But I thought he'd be a good starting point guard and a great leader. And I thought the contract would age well. Now, the contract is one of the best bargains in the NBA.
Well, and also just what good players like this change teams? It just barely happens anymore in free agency. You don't see guys like this sign in free agency. And by the way, a couple of years before, the Knicks signed Julius Randle in free agency. And yeah, Julius is a flawed player. He's not a perfect fit.
Two teams had already said goodbye to him at that point.
No, I know. But my point is, they sign him and they've developed him into a two-time All-NBA forward. Like, they've done a tremendous job building this team. And, now, as you said, McMahon, the one other thing, just real quick. Tonight in this game, Dante DiVincenzo, we talked about him earlier, hits 9 threes, has 33 points. Josh Hart has a 10-point, 10-rebound, 10-assist, triple-double. Those guys all go to Villanova.
Yeah.
And a big part of why they're here is to play with Jalen Brunson.
Yeah.
And on good long-term contracts, because they want to be here with their guy Jalen Brunson. That's where it's not just that the guys become an All-NBA caliber guard. He's also getting guys who are really good players to come be part of this thing moving forward. It's made a huge difference for them.
And for Tibbs, let's just call it like it is. Tibbs can annoy the hell out of guys, can wear guys out. He is the perfect liaison, and I think I'm pronouncing that word correctly, the perfect liaison in the locker room between
liaison.
I was close.
It was a dangerous liaison.
At least you knew the word.
I had a bad feeling as it was coming
between
out.
Between him and Perkins, jeez.
I'll be honest with you. I'm also not quite sure how to spell it. Intermediary.
By the way, he thought he was right. He's like, I think I got this right.
Liaison is the perfect word. You just didn't know how to say it. But at least you knew the word.
I know. Anyway. He's the perfect that thing for Tibbs and the rest of the guys in the locker room. Because, dude, this guy grew up with Tibbs. His dad is literally, Rick Brunson has known Tibbs since he was a high school kid in Salem, Virginia. Jalen's known him his entire life. And so he speaks that language, but he can, you know, he's got a way about him where he's not a rah-rah, real loud type of guy. But everybody in the locker room is going to respect him. Everybody in the locker room is going to, you know, like him. He's got a very likable personality, and he can kind of translate Tibbs into, you know, much more receptive terms.
Well, when Leon Rose took that job, it was well known in the NBA he was going to hire Tom Thibodeau. Although they did go through a significant interview process with a bunch of people, and including interviewing Will Hardy, who I think performed very well in the interview. And he knew he was going to go after Jalen Brunson. I don't know if he knew he was going to be able to get him, but those were like orders 1 and 2. And, you know, that was cronyism, you know, Tibbs' agent, you know, and he was Jalen Brunson's godfather.
And his agent.
But I mean, he was his godfather before he knew he was going to be an NBA player.
Now, to be clear, he wouldn't have been able to go after Brunson unless the Mavericks botched that situation.
He didn't know he was going to get him, but he wanted to get him.
Well, he wanted Donovan Mitchell, and he wanted Carl Anthony Towns. There's a list, and hey, maybe he ends up getting one or the other, or we'll see what happens. But
they've just done a great job of methodically building a team, which the Knicks had not done for a generation. They had constantly rushed into one thing after another and botched one thing after another, gone after guys like Steve Francis and Marbury and Tracy McGrady, and they botched one thing after another for literally a generation. And now, finally, they've built this team that they've done a remarkable job doing, and they've put themselves in position to truly be a championship-level team. Even if they aren't right now, they have the ability to get there, which they haven't in forever.
All right, let's talk about the next 8 days for the Knicks. So they've got 8 tradable first-round picks. Now, obviously, we have just talked about how patient they're going to be. We've seen how they're being patient. I don't think that they're interested in using any of those picks to rent a player, especially a big man. Having said that, I think it's important to understand something, and it's not just about the Knicks situation. It would be any team in this situation. Evan Fournier has not been in the rotation for over a year. He would have very much loved to have been let go, either traded or bought out. But the Knicks haven't done that because they have been holding on to his contract to trade it. And Because if any player, even if it's a superstar or whatever, if any player wants to be a Nick, you know, or they have a shot at somebody, they don't want to have to, if they're going to build a draft pick trade, they don't want to have to include Dante DiVincenzo right. or Mitchell Robinson or Josh Hartnett if they can avoid it. And so that's why Fournier is still on the roster. And it's something important to point out about Fournier is that even though he's got a $19 million contract this year that he's sort of sitting on the bench for, he has a team option in his contract for next year for another $19 million. Now, I don't think that the Knicks are probably picking that up, but it's important to realize that is something that they're not, it's not there by an accident. If they get to the summer, because I think the option date is June 29th, and they don't have another situation, they might pick up that option because they have the same thing that they would need in a trade later on. And now I'm going to tell you why I just discussed all that. Because if they can trade for a player using Evan Fournier that has the same type of contract, who is a better player who can help them now, I think that is something that they would investigate, especially if they can do it without giving up one of those first round picks.
I'm going to steal from Bobby Marks. How about a guy like Jordan Clarkson?
Nah, see, I don't think Clarkson is under contract.
I don't think that's, I am going to bring up a big man.
Okay.
I'm going to bring up Bruce Brown.
Well, Bruce Brown also isn't a big man, A. And B,
well, he plays forward.
The two, a big man.
He's and a also, big man Bruce in Brown six, can five play and center. Under league.
I think you're a little too Bruce focused on the center. Option part. I mean, Bruce Brown played center with the Nets when they were playing small. He's going to be a shooting guard with the Knicks.
Well, let's not.
He can play multiple.
He'll be a two through four.
Sure, he'll be a two through four. Exactly.
He'd be a very useful player who has proven championship experience.
And so, also in some circumstances, he can play all the way down to center in some circumstances if they need him. Okay. So, and the thing about Bruce Brown that is interesting, team option for next year.
I know, but I think you're too focused on the team option part and the thing to focus on more, I think, is because you have Evan Fournier, who has the ability to be on the books next year, and the Knicks aren't going to be a cap space team, and they are a team that's obviously willing to spend money, it's that they can go get, whether it's Bruce Brown or another guy that's been linked to them before, Malcolm Brogdon, another guy who's a better player than Evan Fournier, who could fill a need for them, depending on where in the rotational spectrum it is, who has money on the books next year that becomes expiring, all of a sudden, whether it's a team option or just a contract, then you've got, with him, with other guys, all of a sudden you got the kind of money you need stacked up to go get a star player.
Right. The point is, with Fournier, they have optionality. They can say goodbye on June 29th if they need cap flexibility, or they can keep him and use him as a trade asset. Bruce Brown has the same thing, and he can help them today. Now, Now it may not be Bruce Brown, and my guess is that the Raptors are probably like, oh, the Knicks are calling again? These are our best friends, the Knicks. We're in a lawsuit, but let's not focus on that. Let's get another first-round pick, because they've got a first-round pick from Indiana in the Siakam deal. They didn't get one in for Ananobi, but so if the Knicks
they
can
got
figure
the 31st
out...
31st overall pick.
That's true. But if the Knicks can figure out, I think the Knicks have 9 tradable second round picks. Mm-hmm. I think they still have 9.
They got a lot of stuff to move without touching any of the main stuff they have.
Right.
And they can go get somebody to help their team. And I would assume, don't know this for sure, I'll be surprised if Evan Fournier is on the team after the deadline.
Right. But the key, again, the reason I think it's important to realize is if you're going to do a deal where you need to send pieces out to get a big time name, a high salary player, ideally, that isn't a part of your core or a guy who's got 3 years and $60 million left. And so that's why if they can not change their flexibility come June and get better today, I think they're going to try to do it.
Yep.
Maybe they can't. Maybe there'll be some sort of bidding war for Bruce Brown. I don't know if there will be, because that's a pretty big number for a possible rental player.
Well, and that's the reason Brogdon and Brown have come up a lot, right? Because they're both owed about $22 million next year. And they'll be expiring contracts. You can decline Bruce Brown's option. But either way, if you pick it up and Brogdon's just under contract, then you've got a large expiring to go with your other stuff. And all of a sudden, you're in the game. We've talked about many times, you have the salary to go get anybody who comes available.
What agency represents Bruce Brown?
Would be the Creative Artist Agency, I believe.
That's interesting.
What agency represents Tim Bontemps?
Secret agency.
Oh, okay.
The IT department represents me.
Are there any creative artists on this show?
There's a creative artist in my house.
There you go.
She is. That's right.
Trust me. She represents me too.
His wife is an accomplished painter, accomplished artist.
That is true.
Many celebrities at least one celebrity that I know of have K-Bond, and I'm not talking about Bon Temps, have K-Bond art hanging in their living rooms.
You're talking about Malika?
I just thought it was a celebrity. Anyway, okay, so, and again, I just want to point out that as the Knicks are playing this out, they're sitting there and looking at the two seed thinking that's not out of the realm of possibility as they do this. And I know that Woj and others have reported that they don't think Randall's shoulder injury is severe. I think Woj said weeks, not months. I've been covering basketball for for 25 years. I've covered many players who have had shoulder injuries. It's a very tricky injury, a dislocated shoulder. Even if you can come back and play on it and you avoid surgery, you are at high risk re-dislocating it because of the nature of it.
And the one thing we didn't talk about, because you missed the last couple of days, but it's not a coincidence this has all started with swapping out RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley for OG Anunoby, because the introduction of him to this team not only gives them a defensive weapon that they haven't had for Tom Thibodeau to use, just makes them so much bigger. Because all these guys are really good. DiVincenzo, Josh Hart, Quentin Grimes, like RJ when he was here, all solid players to different degrees, but they're all small. And OG Anunoby is a legit three-size guy who can guard and play the four. Now that Julius Randle's out, when he's healthy, he will start at the four. Like, they didn't have a guy like that before on the team. So they were constantly playing uphill from a size standpoint, and dropping him into the lineup, it's totally balanced them out. It's made them a way more lethal team. And it's just really been a seamless.
And if you were starting
better than you could have guessed.
And if you were starting Bruce Brown and OG Anunoby at 3-4, whichever order you want to say, that would be a very flexible, tough championship. I know when Anunoby won the title with the Raptors, he was recovering from a surgery.
Yeah,
he wasn't actually
playing,
but still.
Yeah. Or Josh Hart with Bruce Brown coming off the bench. Like, that's a lot of those type of guys. And
by the way, one of my favorite quotes of the last year was from Eric Spoelstra from Team USA talking about Josh Hart, about how he goes after loose balls. Mm-hmm. He goes, you know, what we really want, you know, in basketball is guys who get 50-50 balls. Josh Hart gets 30-70 balls.
Yeah.
You know, like, where he's got 30% chance of getting it and he gets it. But
it's just a team full of Tibbs guys up and down the line. Like, well, it's just built to be his team, and it's been a great fit.
And when you say size in basketball, people think height, people think length. Like, Anunoby is built like a tight end.
Yes.
This dude is broad shoulders, you know, like, he is a big physical, you know.
As is Josh Hart. As is Julius Randle.
Right.
I mean, Jalen Brunson plays physically. I mean, he's not a big guy, but he plays physically at point guard. Yeah. Like, they are a physical. Well,
Mitchell Robinson is.
Team. Yeah, Mitchell Robinson.
Hartenstein, too, man.
I can't believe they got Hartenstein for what they got him for. They got him for like 2 years and $20 million. I couldn't believe he couldn't get more than that when they
Was bouncing around the league.
He did. I mean, I'm surprised the Clippers let him go. He was very good for the Clippers.
Dude, Rockets, I mean, he was with the Rockets and he was productive, and he got let go when the Rockets decided that centers were so last generation.
Yeah, well, they're probably
even last
to pay
year, Tom Thibodeau had to get used. He sort of had to figure out how to start using them properly because he struggled early on, but once that's clicked in, really the second half of last year and this year, Hartenstein's been fantastic for them and just been great since Mitchell Robinson went out.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Well, the team that the Knicks dominated last year with their physicality was the Cleveland Cavs, and the Cavs have been dealing with that fallout ever since. And in mid-December, we've talked about it before, they on the same day announced that Darius Garland and Evan Mobley were having surgery. They have gone, I believe, 15-4 since then. Evan Mobley came back at the six-week mark on Monday night, where the Cavs had one of their biggest wins over the last two seasons when they beat the LA Clippers at home. Sometimes you, when you're in January, you get games where teams are on road trips and they sort of make a value judgment. And you certainly see that from the Clippers. I'm here to tell you, the Clippers were trying to win this game. I know they were coming off of a win in Boston. They did have a day off. The Clippers went for that game to win it. 8 minutes left. Ty Lue had his lineup set and rested. He brought Kawhi and Paul George off the bench with seven and change. It was an eight or so point game. He said, go win it. And Kawhi had a great game. Kawhi scored like 34, 36. They had won their last seven games when Kawhi scored over 30, and they went for it. And the Cavs just said no. And it was extremely impressive win for the Cavs. They won. They played two games in Milwaukee last week. They split, but bounced back on Friday and won at Milwaukee. Had a stretch where they just played Orlando twice, Milwaukee twice, and the Clippers, and they went 4-1 in that stretch of games. And they had sort of, they had gotten a little bit fat on some easier teams in earlier January. Well, that's, you can't say that anymore. And here's what I will tell you about the Cavs, which the last 20 games have kind of sort of laid bare. Donovan Mitchell might be a point guard.
That's been the case since his early Utah days.
But even by those standards, the way he's playing now, where it's not really an option, the Cavs, not only do they not have, the Cavs don't, it's not like Donovan Mitchell's playing point guard because somebody else is hurt and he's filling in. He was all they had. Mm-hmm. Their second point guard for the last month has been Caris LeVert, who's definitely not a point guard. He's farther away than Donovan. Like, he wasn't playing point guard for, you know, like 15 or 20% of the possessions. He was playing point guard every possession he was on the court, basically. And he was really good. He's been really good at it. And against the Clippers, he had a 12 assist game. That's his third double-digit assist game of the year. He's more than any other season in his career. And so what you've seen for the Cavs is they have basically been playing with one center, you know, one big, one true big. I mean, they've had George Niang, they've had Dean Wade out there. They've had Tristan Thompson out there at times, but they've generally played with one center, Donovan at point guard, and three floor stretchers, three floor spacers. And they have had the number 10 offense in the over the last 15 games and the number one defense over the last 15 games. They are now up to number two, I think, coming into tonight. I don't know how the Celtics beat the Pacers tonight, but coming into this game tonight, they were tied with the Celtics for the number two defense in the league on the season. And so the thing that they are now having to deal with, Mobley is back. Garland is expected to play Wednesday against the Pistons. What J.B. Bickerstaff, the coach, did against the Clippers was he brought Mobley back, but he didn't fully bring Mobley back. Mm-hmm. He staggered Jared Allen and Mobley in such a way that they were not on the court together in the whole fourth quarter when the game was decided. He had Mobley play center the first 4 minutes and Allen play the center the last, you know, roughly 8 minutes. Allen had 20-17, I think, or 20-18. He's had something like double doubles in 15 of his last 16 games or 16 of his last 17 or something like that. And so the Cavs have gotten themselves into fourth and they have, and again, this number changes by the day. So it may not be the same by the morning, but when I just looked it up, they have the third easiest schedule left coming in, and Garland is back. But the challenge they have is that they've done this team, this with, you know, with one point guard, one center, three shooters. When Garland and Mobley are back, like, Mobley plays offensively like a center. Defensively, he can guard every four in the league just about. But offensively, he plays like a center because he doesn't stretch the floor. And Garland plays like a point guard. You know, he is the point guard, really. And so the question is, how are they going to manage this when they aren't playing with three floor stretchers? Can they change it? Will they change it? Because the Cavs are sitting there looking at the same thing. They're sitting there in fourth. They're two and a half games out of second. They've got a favorable schedule and they're adding back talent. They've got to be sitting there saying to themselves, we can get two. we can pass the Bucks and the Sixers. And yeah, the Knicks are hot right now, but they're missing these starters. Maybe that'll catch up with them. Like they can, you know, I don't think they're the second best team in the East, but they can convince, they can look at that and say they can get there. And no, I don't think they're going to, I don't think they're going to be very active at the trade deadline. They're not really positioned to be active, but they can say they're bringing back Mobley and Garland. So Bontemps, I think watching J.B. Bickerstaff and how he handles this over the next couple of weeks is going to be interesting. One, to see if the Cavs can keep it going. Two, how does he add these guys back in without changing up the flow?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating situation because you're right. I mean, when those guys got hurt, we were talking about, well, is this season going to go completely sideways? Are these guys going to have to make some really hard decisions at the trade deadline? And instead,
you were demanding that they trade Donovan Mitchell.
Well, listen,
I was saying that something that they might have to look at by February.
And no, we all said they had to look at it
for sure.
And they definitely do not right now.
Well, absolutely. No, they're right because Jared Allen has played at a super high level, mm-hmm. and Donovan Mitchell has played at a super high level. And these guys, I mean, yeah, they had some easy games earlier in the month where they got going. Like you said, Brian, they have not had that schedule recently. That Clippers win was a terrific win. Getting a win in Milwaukee last week was a good win, or against Milwaukee last week. Like they've played really, really well with these guys out. But yeah, I mean, it goes back to the same thing we've talked about since the start of the season. Like one of the really important things to watch in the whole league this season was going to be what Evan Mobley's offensive development looked like.
Yep.
And the fact is he hasn't developed offensively at all. And that's a real problem for the Cavs. And it's one they have to deal with now as they work him back in. Because the bottom line is Jared Allen has just been better than him and has been awesome. And so moving Jared Allen out of the way to feature Evan Mobley is not going to work in terms of trying to maximize what you've got right now.
Jared Allen's been one of the best rim running centers in the league.
No question.
And, you know, it's different players who aren't at this level. But like in Utah, Will Hardy basically had to say, I can't play John Collins and Walker Kessler together because they're both rim runners. And if you have two, it just clogs things up. Now, again, Jared Allen's a significantly better player than either of those guys. And so is Mobley. But just in terms of the spacing, when those two guys are on the floor together, the Cavs' offensive rating is 108. That would rank in the high 20s in the league. And there is with the guards, with Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, you know, there's a little bit of crossover, but those guys can coexist. You know, multiple playmaking guards, neither one of them are shooting the ball great this year from three, but both proven three-point shooters. I think you're fine there. The question is, can you hold up defensively with those guys? And if you've got, you know, a really good rim protector behind them, which you're guaranteed to always have, then the answer has been yes. But it still gets down to Jared Allen and Mobley. As much as they've wanted that to work, those guys kind of get in each other's way.
Even in the game against the Clippers are an excellent defensive team. Not only are they good because of their personnel, but they're very well coached because that's Ty Lue, mm-hmm. And they have a good scheme. Mm-hmm. Jared Allen actually provided spacing from the center position. Now, the Clippers are playing without Ivica Zubac. Now, that was a factor, and they finished the game. I don't know who was at center at any one time, but I think Kawhi was basically playing center down the stretch. Jared Allen was defending Kawhi the last 5 or 6 minutes of the game.
Yeah,
the Clippers were doing a good job trying to cover the ground, but when they got into switches, Allen got a couple of easy baskets because he would get into an advantageous position. And while the Clippers were trying to manage dealing with him in the middle, he was sort of inverse stretching the floor because he was pulling their perimeter players in to bring help. In fact, there was one point in the fourth quarter of this game where the Clippers were giving the Cavs issues. The Cavs were having trouble scoring. And James Harden got called for a defensive 3 seconds, which drove Ty up the wall because mm-hmm. he couldn't believe that they called a defensive 3 seconds with like 4 minutes left. But one of the reasons was because Harden was trying to stay in the middle to bring help on Allen. And so, you know, you wouldn't confuse Jared Allen with Shaquille O'Neal, but he gets the ball against a smaller guy in the paint. The guy shoots like 68%. And so
he's not just a dunker either. He has some touch around the basket.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No question. And so, Evan Mobley took 7 shots last night and none of them were outside the immediate paint area. They're all in the paint and they're all right by the rim.
No, not
like,
only
just
is he
not in the same spots.
Yes. Not only is Evan Mobley not developed an outside shot because of how poor his shooting has been this year, he's done the opposite and sort of run home to mama. He's Now, by the way, the guy's a killer in the paint. He led the NBA in dunks last year.
Yep.
And he's a killer, you know, scoring in the restricted area, even though he's not physically large. He is, you know, I think his numbers might even be better than Zion's in the restricted area. And Zion's one of the best paint scorers of a generation. He'll put the ball in the basket in there. He's definitely got offensive talent, just, you know, not launching a jumper. So, you know, both those teams, like do either of you think that the Knicks and Cavs could win the East, assuming that there's not a massive trade here?
No.
Okay.
There's a path to them making the conference finals.
I agree. Because
honestly, they could be playing each other in the second round as the 2 and 3 seeds, but they're not good enough to get through 3 rounds and beat some combination of Philly, Milwaukee, Boston, maybe even Miami if they're healthy, though they've been a disaster lately. I think that's asking a lot. But they could easily win a couple series.
Not unless the Knicks pull off a move that I honestly just don't see pull off, like a surprising significant trade that just clicks. And as great as the Anunoby fit has been, and as smooth and easy and seamless as it's been, typically trades take a little bit of time to
and there's not a guy of that caliber that's coming on board that's going to change their ceiling right now anyway.
Probably.
I mean, I guess, sure, barring something truly miraculous happening.
We didn't think Durant was getting traded at this point last year. I mean, he had previously demanded a trade, but we didn't.
Sure.
You know,
if Kevin Durant asks for another trade and ends up on the Knicks,
well, that's not what I was implying. Just to be clear,
I know. I'm just saying.
We've had some wild aggregation in the last week. Yeah. I mean,
but one
the
year
aggregators
ago,
are on their toes, baby. They are ready.
There you go.
They are ready.
And Wendy loves you. 1 year ago, we didn't see Kyrie or KD getting traded, and then they both end up getting moved.
Sure.
So you never know what's going to happen. But it's hard to, like, there's not a move that you see materializing for them.
But they are both really good teams, and it will be fascinating to see, because while it might be a little bit easier fit, it's a very duplicative fit with the guards, and it's a very duplicative fit with the bigs. And
I will say, I'm less worried about Garland. Garland is having his worst 3-point shooting season of his career.
Donovan is too.
Just hard to win with two guards that don't.
I agree, but Donovan is
creating.
I agree, but Donovan is creating, and the floor is stretched and spaced, and he's, you know, going to, you know, he's.
No, I know. It's just, if you have two small guards who don't guard, it's just, it's hard.
I will just say, that's true. I will just say that.
Unless you're the number 2 rated defense in the NBA, despite having two small guards.
I mean, they've also not had Darius Garland for this entire run. Fair. So
it goes both ways. I will say this. Last year, Garland shot 41% on threes on 6 a game. If he can rediscover that shooting touch, and you know, he had a wicked injury, he had a broken jaw. I believe his jaw was wired shut.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a weird one, because I don't even think he missed the game that he was in, and he like got banged and then got looked at a couple of days later and had a fracture.
The guy gets hit in the head more than a hockey player. He's constantly getting hit. Cavs fans will tell you this. He is, like, last year, he, you remember the opening night of the season, he got poked in the eye.
Yes,
like,
I do remember.
I think he had a concussion another time last year. He's constantly getting hit in the face. It's crazy. And so he had his jaw wired shut. But I believe he could shoot and run. Maybe not when the jaw was wired shut, but, you know, his recovery in theory should be.
And he and Mobley are obviously very talented players. It's what makes it such an interesting situation, because they have to try to figure it out.
If he gets back to shooting at 40% from threes, it lessens. I think there's a pathway for the guards to work better than there is a pathway for the bigs. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Wendy, real quick, what would you pay get Bontemps' jaw wired shut?
That's not a very nice thing to say.
He would figure out a way.
My jaw was wired shut. I'd take a nice long vacation. Let you do all the work for a while.
Yeah.
Hopefully that doesn't happen.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Speaking of teams that play big, you saw a really good win for the Minnesota Timberwolves on Monday night in Oklahoma City. they were coming up. Those two teams were tied for the lead in the West coming into the game, but they came with their tails tucked a little bit because the Thunder had just lost to the Pistons like by double digits.
Yes,
and the Wolves gave up, I believe, a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter against the Spurs.
It was first place in the West was at stake with two teams that were coming off of losses to last place teams.
Right.
It was pretty strange. And I tell you what, don't tell me you can't play defense in the modern NBA, because I watched a great defensive game and not an ugly game, but like two teams that are playing extremely high level defense. I watched that happen. So you can play defense in this league still. And it was a huge win for the Timberwolves. They didn't have Mike Conley. And we've talked a lot about just how important Conley is. It's not a coincidence that they had losses against the Hornets where they melted down in the clutch. They had that loss that you mentioned against the Spurs where they melted down in the clutch. Conley's was out for both of those. You know, he has this sore hamstring. They're playing it. They, you know, played it safe with him. I don't know if he'll play against the Mavericks or not. We'll see, but wasn't available. And man, Ann Edwards, who has often not been a very good decision maker with the ball, with the game on the line, was phenomenal despite being frustrated as hell with the referees. And, you know, we can get to that a little bit later, but like, you know, had to drive down. First of all, they took the lead for good when he made a great read off the pick and roll with Gobert. Boom, hit Jaden McDaniels in the corner. That's the three that put him up for good. The next time, rejects a screen from Gobert, high pick and roll, drives down the lane, goes up, and it was marginal contact according to the NBA's last 2-minute report. Which,
boy, there were some still photos that were damaging.
I mean, there were all five fingers on him of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on his forearm.
It was like when Jaylen Brown had marginal out contact. Hand. Yeah, it was like when Jaylen Brown had marginal contact to his head by Buddy Hield in the game.
That was the wildest last 2 minute.
I don't really know how to pronounce that one word that I tried to say earlier that starts with an L, and I guess I don't know the definition of marginal. But anyways, the Wolves won this with defense. And like down the stretch, you know, Jalen Williams drives down the lane and Gobert's just all over him, smothering him, you know, covering, you know, arms stretched up to the rafters. And Jalen Williams, who we all know is a tremendous player, tremendous offensive player, shuffles his feet. And it was doesn't show up in the stat sheet for Gobert, but it was absolutely a turnover forced by Gobert. Then there's another one where it looks like Lou Dort's going to have a clean three. Whoops, here comes Jaden McDaniels, 6'9", and the arms, I don't know what the wingspan
is. I don't know how tall he actually is, but he plays taller than he is.
Well, with the afro, he's about 7'7" right now.
Well, but those arms, those are Anthony Davis-style arms. I know that.
Yeah, wiry as hell, but and you know, Dort can't get the three off, kind of pump fakes, thinks he's going to get one. Nope. Gives it up to Chet in the corner. Here comes Gobert from the paint. You know, challenges Chet. Chet can't get it off. He tries to put on the floor. Gobert stays with him. Ends up in Kenrich Williams' hands. He tries to drive. He throws something up. It's got no chance because Gobert's challenged him. And it was, you know, Chris Finch said, Gobert is like an elite scorer in the sense that game on the line, you know, he loves those moments and he amps up his game. He's just doing it on the defensive end. And that's how they won the game. Jaden McDaniels played a great game. They had him guarding Chet. And, you know, Chet's struggling right now. He's in a little bit of a rut. I think but it's the first time this year, I believe, that he's had single digit sub 50% shooting performances in consecutive games. They're 2-5 when he scores in single digits, 5-8 when he shoots under 50% from the floor. But Jaden McDaniels was the primary defender on him. Why? Because then you can have Gobert guarding the worst shooter on the floor, which Josh Giddey hit a few early on, but they were fine with that. And Gobert's clogging everything up.
The Wolves' length gives the Nuggets problems because, you know, what do the Nuggets do? They do two things. One, they run Jamal Murray, Jokic pick and roll. Okay, that's hard to deal with. And they give Jokic the ball on the elbow or at the nail, and Jokic goes to work. And I'm not allowed to watch Nuggets games this year, but every highlight that I see of Aaron Gordon is getting a feed from Jokic for a dunk. I don't know what percentage of dunks Aaron Gordon has of his shots, but like it's a high percentage and they're passes from Jokic. Well, guess what? They can put Towns on Jokic because he has good enough size and it's not, you know, he doesn't have to cover a lot of ground. Mm-hmm. Then you can have Gobert back there defending that rim. And it takes away a huge piece. Obviously, they beat him in the playoffs last year. It's not unsolvable. But they present a profile that Denver doesn't have the, you know they have an antidote for a little bit of what Denver does.
And they beat him in the playoffs without Jaden McDaniels. And I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination the Wolves would have won the series with him because the Nuggets were an absolute juggernaut that mowed through the entire postseason. But when you talk about why are the Timberwolves the number one defense in the league, number one is the guy who should win his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award this year, Rudy Gobert. Number two is Jaden McDaniels. And then we get to number three, Ant Edwards, who is a monster on that end of the floor.
Another guy who plays bigger than his size. By the way, Jackson looked it up. McDaniels, 6'11 and a half. I'm going to call it 7 wingspan.
Yeah. I mean, he's huge. And look, like we've talked at different points this year about Minnesota and their offense and how it could be a problem in the playoffs because they can't necessarily get to the same kind of numbers offensively as a lot of these other teams. This was the formula for them in the playoffs. 107-101 game. You're winning with defense, physically overwhelming teams with your size, with your strength inside. Like that, if they're going to make a deep playoff run, this is exactly the kind of formula they're going to have. And look, on the other side, Josh Giddey was a game worse minus 17. I understand why he's starting. I understand what they're trying to do with this team. But when it gets down to it in the playoffs, his lack of shooting, his lack of defense, it's a bad fit with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. At some point, they're going to have to change that spot in the starting lineup.
Well, they've changed the closing lineup a lot, including last night.
But they're going to have to go, when it gets down to it, they're going to have to just go away from Josh Giddey. I don't know when it's going to happen.
They've finished with Cason Wallace.
Yeah, but you can't. They had Josh Giddey in this game. Josh Giddey was out there for 19 minutes and was minus 17.
And that was with him hitting a few threes.
That's right.
It's not even whether he hits them or not. It's just teams don't guard. Now, the Celtics did the same thing. They had Porzingis on him, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but Giddey made them pay for that.
Made some shots in that game.
But the one hope for Giddey there is that Chip England works his magic. I mean, hey, he's got Lou Dort shooting 40%+. Jalen Williams, not that he came in the league as a non-shooter, but Jalen Williams is shooting in the mid-40s. By the way, Jalen Williams sprained his ankle in that game. He is out in Denver on Wednesday. Hopefully that's not something that keeps him out.
Cason Wallace shooting 42%.
While. Yeah. Listen, the Thunder are certainly going to be very interesting in the playoffs this year. I think when you talk to people who are with teams that have a chance to go deep, they're kind of curious about the Thunder, but think that it's gonna take them, they're gonna have to get their nose bloody in the playoffs before they're really gonna be a threat to come out of the West. But who knows? I mean, hey, they
young
still
teams,
be the number
young
one
teams,
team.
Yeah, young teams always have to go through it in the playoffs at some point.
I tell you what, though, man, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is unreal.
Bontemps, when is the next poll gonna be?
In the coming weeks.
He's got a chance. Now, they're in this dip, so they're probably not going to be first place in the West when the poll comes out. But if they end up winning the number one seed in the West,
look, man,
I think he's going to have a real chance. Dude,
well, and listen,
so
Joel Embiid.
Crafty.
So
Joel,
look,
Joel Embiid is playing in this game in Golden State.
He shouldn't be playing.
I agree. His knee is messed up. He's only can miss 5 more games. I think you could basically just write him out of the MVP picture at this point. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be right there with anybody having a chance.
Look, like Jokic is having an MVP year. I mean,
is Giannis, so are a lot of guys. But to McMahon's point, if the Thunder win the West with a team full of 22-year-olds and this guy's averaging 30+ and playing at both ends, he's going to have a shot.
I'm going to give you 31,
6-6 and leads the league in steals.
That's right.
And look, if Embiid is out of the mix, Joker, Giannis, SGA, and then Luka, although that games played thing could end up biting Luka. I think it's going to be his 9th missed here in Minnesota. And obviously the Mavericks can't be the 8th.
He might get his 16th technical too, somewhere in there.
Oh, could you imagine? Could you? Listen, I don't want to. If that happens, I'm going to make sure somebody reports it first. I don't want to point it out. I'll tell you that.
Well, look, also, when you watch Shea defend, he, you know, he's not just a stat putting up the two assists. He's extremely disruptive defensively.
Yeah. And he also has the luxury, though, of playing with three guys who are more important to their defensive scheme. Lou Dort's our stopper. Jalen Williams takes his second toughest assignment, 1 through 4. And then Chet Holmgren is a all-defensive candidate as a rookie. He's one of the best rim protectors in the league. And that allows Shea to guard, you know.
And Josh Giddey.
There's a reason I left that part out. That allows Shea to guard the fourth or fifth option. And, you know, obviously they're switching a lot and, you know, whatever. But, and he is extremely disruptive. But I just tell you, there were 6 or 7 of his buckets last night where I'm just sitting there watching and I gasp. Because it's like, how did, like, it's magic. His footwork, and you talk about like this, the same with Luka. Their footwork after they pick up the dribble is just historically elite. I mean, they're just pivoting and, you know, pivots and pump fakes. And Gilgeous Alexander's got these arms that just kind of look like slinkies, finishing on all these weird angles, slithering through cracks. He's unbelievable off the dribble.
By the way, Joel Embiid just had his leg fell on by Jonathan Kuminga and limped back to the locker room after being in a lot of pain.
So, was it on his left leg or his right?
It was the same leg, same left leg that he's been dealing with issues with for a while. It wasn't great.
Look, we talked about it in the last pod. He didn't look good against the Pacers when they lost that game last Thursday. There's something going on with his left knee. It does not excuse the way they handled the game against the
thing about that made no sense was he was not on the injury report. I don't understand why he wasn't.
Yeah,
I thought he might not play watching him on Saturday because he wasn't moving around.
I know.
It didn't make
you
any
sense.
You
said that, and I can testify that you said that during the game.
It was, and look, I'm not, the way they handled
this
everything
guy, this
Saturday
guy scores,
was bizarre.
This guy scores 30 points literally every game. Every game he scores 30 points. It's only a question of whether he's going to score 40, 50, 60, or 70. The 30 is not a thing. He's got 14 points in 30 minutes tonight. This guy...
Yeah,
he scores 32 points in 30 minutes. He's got 14 points, and he's gone to the locker room. He's 5-18. His knee is obviously bothering him. You know,
it's not great. You
know, right now, the Sixers are going through it. They are going. They're on a West Coast trip, which is hard in the best of times.
Be 0-4, and Tyrese Maxey's missed the last three games. Mm-hmm. Joel had missed the last couple. Bias
also,
Harrison had the flu. It's been bad.
Right. Also, Melton's been out. Not that he's headed for the All-Star team, but that's a starter.
They have 4 starters out. I think Nick Batum didn't play today either.
He did not play. Yeah.
I mean, it's just been.
Yeah,
been
I mean,
Furkan
Korkmaz played 20 minutes in this game. That, you know, no offense to him, but that's an indication of where they're at.
No offense. It's always.
I mean, KJ Martin has not been in the rotation all year. He's playing 25 minutes.
And listen, it's far more important. It's obviously far more important that Embiid is ready to go when it matters. And hopefully this isn't too bad and he's good for the playoffs and he can have a healthy playoff run, which he has not been able to have yet in his career. But like, this is just the clearest sign yet from what we said before. Like, this guy's not winning MVP.
No.
So it's going to be somebody else. He may not be eligible by the time the next draw poll happens.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to hear crying about the 65 game limit because honestly, if you miss 20% of the season and other guys are that good, you're not the most valuable player. But it's a
point
bummer.
Is whether
it's not like he's, you know, the Denver thing looked bad, but it's not like he's just kicking his feet up and missing games for the heck of it.
No, and the bottom line is whether he's just not going to be eligible. Period. Right.
Right.
So whether it's Giannis or Shea or Jokic or whoever. Somebody is.
It'll
is
be one
be...
of four guys. Like I said, Luka's the fourth guy, and the Mavericks are going to have to get healthy and win some games to give him a real shot. Because statistically, he's absolutely going to have a case. I mean, Stats Williams sent me a bunch of numbers making an argument that this guy just had one of the best months and 2 month spans in NBA history.
There's a couple other guys who I think could work their way in the mix too. I think Kawhi's got an outside shot.
I haven't thought about this fully, but what I've been saying is I'm not so sure there's a more important development in the whole NBA this year about this, how good Kawhi has been in terms of the effect on the title. Again, I will say to you,
well, and that Harden trade, listen, as much as people were piling on early, hey, that Harden trade looks like an absolute transformational. You know, I mean, it changed the league because the Clippers might be the best team in the NBA. I saw Perk's on the record. He says the Clippers are winning the title. Perk's never wrong.
Well, listen, they from start of December on, they play the Wizards on Wednesday, final day of January. They're 22-5 since December 1st.
The Wizards have won two in a row,
pretty
sir.
Good. Hey, listen, it's why the Cavs, that was a great win for the Cavs. I mean, on Saturday, the Clippers absolutely curb stomped the Celtics in Boston. Just dominated them start to finish.
Yeah.
One of the most impressive games of the year. Like they've been playing incredibly well.
Well, all of which, getting back to the Cavs, makes that win.
No question.
So, because we were like, oh, soft schedule, fluky stuff.
Well, it was.
No, they've got some big time wins lately. They've got some big time wins.
They've carried it over.
Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully Embiid comes out of this okay. But by the way, Jackson's like, Korkman's a 6 of 7 or 6 of 8 on threes tonight. Yeah, I know. He's having a good night, Jackson. But I'm just saying, it's not good.
Don't talk to Jackson with that tone. Man.
Anyway.
Jackson, pop on and stick up for yourself.
Same tone Christian Wood had today.
LOL.
Oh, my God.
I tell you what, he meant to quote tweet. I mean, who doesn't occasionally screw up an intended quote tweet 20 minutes before tip off while they're pouting about not being in the starting lineup? I mean,
well,
could have happened to anybody.
We're in dangerous zone of maybe relegating the Lakers to not talk about, but
the LOL Lakers.
Look, the what?
LOL Lakers. They ain't LA. They're LOL. Perfect. Thank you, Christian Wood.
He can't pronounce liaison, but he can make jokes spontaneously.
He's got that.
I got that L word down. also got loser down, and that's what Christian Wood is on 8 straight teams. He's never played in the playoffs. At some point, gee whiz, maybe every single coach isn't screwing him over. Maybe,
the Lakers fell under.
Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe every coach that he's ever had has just not known what an all-star caliber player that he is. And
he hasn't had this one holstered, folks. He hasn't had it ready.
What happened, in case people don't know, Anthony Davis missed a game against the, it was a back-to-back. He hurt his groin in Houston on Monday night. Tough back-to-back. So Anthony Davis, who's only missed, you know, a couple of games all year, he sits, and it comes out shortly before the game that Jackson Hayes is going to start. Not Christian Wood at center. Christian Wood tweets, LOL. To what we don't know, people are making assumptions. After the game, he said...
Really going out on a limb there. LOL.
I don't know. After the game, he said that he meant to quote tweet something and say LOL, but he just forgot to hit.
Well, this was my favorite part.
20 minutes before the game.
Jovan Buhar
was like, do you usually tweet 20 minutes before the game?
Yeah. So Jovan Buhar, former colleague here, now at The Athletic, said that he didn't mean to quote tweet thing, right? Then, in a follow-up tweet, Wood added later in his availability that he feels like he could do more for the team if he plays more, but that he has been limited to 14 to 15 minutes usually, or 20 to 22 when AD is out. So I don't know. Seems like you might have had an ulterior motive there, Christian.
Hold on. I just want to go back to Christian Wood signed a minimum contract in early September.
It's too much Christian Wood.
Usually an indication that you're not necessarily perceived as an extremely valuable player in the league. Also, the fact that the Mavericks were shopping him before the deadline and would have accepted 4 stained jock straps in exchange. Maybe could have negotiated it down to 2.
All right. Get to the point.
And they weren't able to move him. He told our pal, Anscaped's Mark J. Spears, the Hall of Famer, this is a statement. I've always wanted to be a Laker. I know we can win a championship. Communication with a coach is a big key. Coach Hamm and I go back to our Milwaukee days, and we've had great conversations every day about this opportunity. He believes in me and told me I'll be playing a big role and knows what I can do. I'm looking forward to this, and Fussure, that's capital F-A-S-U-R-E, motivated after what Dallas did. Oh, he's proven those Mavericks wrong. Not that the Mavericks don't have their own set of issues, but come on, man. Again,
than Jackson Hayes tonight.
Okay, cool. 8 teams, not a second. All right,
enough Christian Wood. Enough Christian Wood. The relevant thing for the Lakers, obviously very rough back-to-back. They get beat by Dylan Brooks and the Rockets on Monday. Jared Vanderbilt gets thrown out of the game. AD doesn't play in this game Tuesday. They get pounded pretty good by the Hawks in this game. Now they go to Boston Thursday. They come to New York to play at the Garden on Saturday. They go to Charlotte on Monday. And then they go home, trade deadline night. They play Denver, followed by New Orleans on a back-to-back. That is a rough stretch of games.
The other very relevant moment, another Mac-10 tweet, Mac-10 seed, our old pal. who's a play-in expert if I've ever seen one. Anyways, he tweeted video. D'Angelo Russell was at the free throw line, and he tweeted video of fans in a section next to him chanting, "We don't want you. We don't want you. We don't want you," which is the same thing that every coach has ever had Christian Wood chants in unison.
By the way, the Hawks fans should be careful throwing stones from the glass house. They're not exactly burning up the league, but they did
You think there'll be some chance when Trey's shooting free throws?
Well, no, but the thing about the Lakers is, again, LeBron and AD are playing well and they are back, but they're back under 500.
And so, Russell was just cooking. You had probably the best stretch you ever could get out of D'Angelo Russell.
That's right. He just had three super hot. He did not play well tonight.
Yeah.
Three super hot weeks. And
he didn't play. Over. He didn't. He's like, no. I got to tone it down. I don't want to.
I don't want to convince the Hawks to trade for me. Yeah. So I don't know what the Lakers are going to do. I would just say that I don't know how many starting lineups they've used, but none of them have worked. Darvin Ham has changed his starting lineup all the time. He has kind of refused to go back to the lineup that they used in the playoffs last year. He's used almost every other lineup that they can use and it hasn't worked. And it absolutely drives the Lakers fans up a wall that he continues to play Torian Prince as many minutes as he continues to play. I mean, I'm not saying that like if he was using Hachimura as the starting four and put LeBron at three, that it would make that much
Torian
of a difference.
Torian Prince is shooting 39% from three on a team that can't shoot. What do
I'm
people
telling
want
you,
him
man,
to do? I
mean, like the Lakers fans are going nuts.
Well,
Torian Prince playing too much is your problem. It's you got a lot bigger problem.
Every once in a while, fans who comment on social media might not know what the hell they're talking about. I think I've got some recent examples that I can show you that are evidence of that. hey, Lakers still a top six roster, top six in the West.
They should, but they don't.
Top six in the Pacific Division?
Yes, absolutely. I stand by that one. Yes, they do have a top six roster in the West, but they're underachieving. Actually, top six. See, the thing about the Thunder were not in there, the Wolves were not in there.
They got a better roster than, let's just do it quick. They got a better roster than Minnesota?
No. Denver?
No.
Thunder?
No.
Clippers?
No.
Suns? Kings?
No. Suns? No.
It's arguable with the Suns. They should have a better roster than the Suns, but they don't. The Suns, you know, the top two are, you know, obviously the Suns' third best player is better than what the Lakers got. But in theory, the Suns got a bunch of.
Just given all the
defense. Suns got Grayson Allen, a bunch of
minimums. The Suns being automatic for you. What about the Pelicans?
I don't think
so. What about the Mavericks?
It's arguable.
That's arguable. That is arguable.
The Pelicans are arguable. It depends on what day you ask. Yeah. No, you know what? They got a better roster than the Pelicans. They're just not getting it done.
They're not deeper than the Pelicans. The Pelicans actually.
No, the Pelicans have great depth, but at the top, AD and LeBron. Come on.
Yeah, and Zion is not playing at a star level.
And Ingram is doing okay. LeBron and AD are going to be all-stars.
It does remain the remarkable thing about the Lakers. If you said to me before the season that LeBron James and Anthony Davis would combine through 49 games to miss 9 games, I would have thought they'd be in pretty good shape.
And it's not like either of them are having down years. They're both playing extremely
well. But they're also just available. They've been available for 95% of the games.
They're getting 95% of outstanding play from those guys, and they still, as a whole, stink, to borrow Bontemps' term.
Very technical.
USWB, baby. Nobody knows stink.
Be saying that anymore after that Christian Wood soliloquy.
And by the way, you know, Rui Hachimura is not playing poorly. Rui Hachimura is playing, you know, I know he's missed some games, but Rui Hachimura he's been playing okay. Like, as long as you're looking at guys who are on the Lakers roster who are, you know, doing okay. Hachimura, it's not like Hachimura has been terrible. And I know that, you know, Bontemps always talks about, I know Bontemps always talks about like how Hachimura caught fire from 3-point shooting. That's why he got the contract. Well, he's shooting 39% from three this year.
Sure.
And he's averaging more points than he did last year and shooting overall pretty comparable to what he did last year.
It's just hard to figure out how they're a 500 team with a top six roster. And
they're not even 500.
These great players.
They're under 500. All right.
Coming interesting week till the trade deadline.
Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. This is the time of year when like hours out of my day are taken up by like what the Jazz might do with Kelly Olynyk. And no offense to Kelly Olynyk.
It's a really difficult life that you have, Brian. It's a really difficult life.
Jackson, I have a request. Some violin music for women.
Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to Jackson. Thank you to Bon Thompson McMahon. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with these two jokers on Friday.
Adios, amigos.